Hey gang, this is a bit of an impromptu live stream. I hadn't planned to do it right now. I was planning to wait a while and gather my thoughts, but I have had so many messages over since conference weekend. So today is the 4th of April 2024, and last weekend was General Conference, and some of you may have already heard. So if you were watching Nemo the Mormon's halftime conference show, then you may have already seen this news. But if you haven't, we're going to talk about it. So I want to bring you up to speed with what my journey has been like so far, so that if you're here for the first time or if you have questions about what's happening, it might help you understand what has brought me to this point. I converted to the church as a 16-year-old. I had wanted to ever since I was 14, and a friend of mine who had church members in her family, the missionaries were around, and it felt to me like the right thing to do. My home life was really uncertain, and I found myself not long after being baptized in a position where my family asked me to choose between them and the church. I was going to have to move out of my home as a child. And of course, I did. Because when you issue that kind of ultimatum to a teenager, they don't generally respond very well to it. I ended up having to leave the church for a while because when you have an unstable home life and your background is very, you don't have parental support, I'm crashing on the sofas of friends. I ended up feeling ashamed when I would go to church, and so I left for a while. After I married, I returned to church activity. The same guy who I had met as a 16-year-old when I'd just recently become homeless, he has been with me for this entire journey, and we are still together today. He's a good un. When I chose to return to church activity, it was with all of the hope of someone who is absolutely committed to it. Again, I had some life challenges, and I think I would have been about maybe about 23 with two children, and I felt like I wasn't able to make it work. I was disfellowshipped, and I was okay with that. It hurt, but I was okay with that. Then I had my third child. My husband and I had separated for a little while, and things were very, very chaotic. My eldest son was having major, major nightmares about world instability, about the headlines we read in the newspapers. Is the world going to end? And all of the wars and things that are happening. And of course, this little 12-year-old who is very frightened about the big world is projecting worries that he has about his family staying together, which we have been struggling onto making them more global. And I felt like he would benefit from things that I really believed to be true, being able to give something to a higher power, being able to have faith and confidence in the future. We did some counseling, and I felt like maybe he might need or benefit from the missionaries coming into his life. I knew what would happen. I knew that he would believe. I knew that if he did, I was going to have to make a big choice. I would bear testimony about this a lot. I knew that if he joined the church, whether or not he was going to stay, and statistically, people like us don't stay in Scotland. Most people join the church or sort of transition in and out of it. that's statistically, that's what happens to us. And I didn't want to be a statistic. So I committed. I had been smoking, and I don't know if you guys remember the stop smoking program the missionaries would teach, and it was miraculous. I didn't crave cigarettes. I had maybe one mild craving this whole time, because I had given everything over to a higher power, telling me that smoking was bad for my health, and my kids begging me, and all of the stuff around that. I knew it didn't matter. What mattered is I promised God I wasn't gonna. So that was the only thing that bound me to choosing not to smoke. I felt the same way about all of the promises I had made. And I had already been to the temple. So choosing to go back was an emotional experience. All of the support I received. I was always welcomed into the ward as someone, a family member who hadn't been there for ages, and it was a wonderful experience. The people in my ward have always been exceptional. And I did wonder where everyone had gone. There were so many fewer people than there were there previously. But I was committed to staying. I wasn't here to play at it. I threw myself in with everything I had. So when volunteers were needed, I was up for it. I eventually got to a point where I was trying to come up with creative ideas to be able to support our ward. I would organise activities, I would organise celebrations, and having an acting, directing, performance background, I would organise productions, and because we had a lot of talent in our ward, it was exciting and it was home. And this feeling, This is my nature, and church would really, really be a good outlet for that. There were things that were unspoken. So, for example, when people would loan me books at this early time when I had returned, and there was so much, I was reading everything voraciously, everything I could get my hands on. And I know lots of other people have been there too. But I would read and read. And Mormon doctrine, of course, is one of the early things that it's on every Mormon geek's bookshelf, right? And I remember one of the things in there being about being a vegetarian is a step away from apostasy. And I remember having a chuckle about that and talking to the person who loaned me that book. And I was like, hey, so what do you think about that? And they were like, oh, well, you know, sister so-and-so, she's a vegetarian. Like, we, you know, that's not. And which I thought was really weird, because I am also a vegetarian. And the reason I bring it up is, well, that's a kind of weird thing. And what I learned really quickly is we don't talk about it. We don't, if there's a weird thing, we don't say it, because it might either offend someone or be taken the wrong way. But what we absolutely will not do is talk about what is weird about it. Like, I don't think that's right. I would have experiences when I was in church of listening to talks, especially given by women. I would, as an OCD sufferer, I would have sort of spikes in the physical discomfort that comes along with OCD. It's very, very difficult to explain. But when women were talking about womanhood and what it means to be a woman, I remember having the feeling of wanting to escape from my own skin. I could feel it in my body. What was being described to me was not anything that I related to, or maybe there were a few things, but it was some kind of wrong, otherworldly, that's not me. That's, you're talking about you. You're not talking about me. Relief Society would be so full of loveliness and charm, and we would all just reaffirm the same things. And eventually it got to the point where I really struggled with my role as a woman in the church. And key to me coming back, really key to me coming back, when I talked about those statistically we wouldn't stay, what I was very clear on is the things that worked for people before, the answers that they would have, or the testimonies that they would bear, or the things that the answers to all of their questions, statistically, you will all leave too. So if those things weren't enough to keep all of these people previously as active members of the church, then they might not work for me. So what do I need to do to own my own decision, to support my own faith, to learn, to understand everything that I need to, so that this is my decision, so that I'm supported in it? I guess became a kind of baby apologist as I'm reading all of this stuff and really involved in websites that were talking about the answers to gospel questions. And yes, of course, it threw up a hell of a lot more than I ever thought I had in the first place. I was part of a group of people who were answering questions online. And while I found it really, really helpful, I also sort of learned the patterns of what we can say to keep ourselves comfortable. And sometimes those answers that we would come up with were satisfying enough. I wanted to be very clear that I was putting the work in to be here, and those platitudes would not work for me. What being a woman, what was being presented to me, was not going to work for me. I learned very early on that if I was going to be here, I was going to fully be here as me. And yes, at times that meant speaking out and being the person that many of you have been, where we kind of raise our hands and sort of say, well, yeah, but also, because when I would do that and I would share a feeling of dissent from the main point. So when we're talking about womanhood, and especially motherhood, and how wonderful and exceptional and self-sacrificing we all have to be, if I would share, actually, this is really hard, and a lot of times it really sucks, I would see other women nodding, and they would need to hear it, which is what kept me going, because then they would share their vulnerability. And every time I was at church, it felt like a bit of a battle to help us all become real and not just hide behind all the answers that you're going to give, because they've all been there. This is their millionth time of answering the same questions. And aren't you bored of that? Don't you want something, you know, that's going to actually make you think and challenge? It turns out many people don't, which is fine. Many people were showing up to, I guess, climb the rammy umptum and say the same old thing, and testimonies sound the same. But so many more needed that realness. And that's what I wanted to bring. The other major part of what brought me here is my son, my Ronan. Now, Ronan, as many of you know, has complex special needs. He has a type of brain injury acquired before birth, and he also has autism, and he also has a learning difficulty. And church structure was really good for him in the primary stage. Children who have good structure, who know what to expect, who are given guidelines on what we do and when it's appropriate to do it, that can be really helpful. For lots of kids, it sucks, but in our case, this was wonderful. And when Ronan was due to move into the youth programme, all of that structure was really gone. I remember whenever Ronan turned 12 and he was going into the young men's programme, that Sunday after his 12th birthday, And he'd had his little sort of interviews. I mean, Ronan would just say sort of yes to everything. He was a very, very compliant boy until he got so ill that he couldn't comply anymore. He just couldn't do it anymore. But the Sunday after he was 12, when all the young men stood up to go and pass sacrament, he tried to get out of his seat to go and join them. And it broke my heart. I, as his mother, as the person who just knows every part of him, I had missed the fact that he had a hope and an expectation. The same one that many of our young women have too, that we have to explain. It didn't occur to me because Ronan doesn't require baptism, because no one had spoken to Ronan about how he was going to have this really responsible job. He just assumed, like all of the other boys. And that was the kind of defining moment. I fought for Ronan to be able to participate. I fought for Ronan to be able to have a job. And I kept being told that, well, there isn't one. This is a priesthood ordinance. There isn't any, you know, things have to be a very, very specific type of way. And he can't even, you know, be a steward outside. He, you know, none of those things will work for him. And I'm trying to be creative. See, this is what I do. When something doesn't work, I will problem solve and try and fix my way around it and present solutions and try to bring that to my faith as well. But I asked, well, could he at least bring the bread? And that was a job he could do. There was a bit of sort of surprise that, like, well, yes, of course you can do that. Priesthood holders, do you know it was your job to think of all of that stuff? You get that revelation. But in my desperation, okay, I presented that to you and Ronan was happy and he had the job. And he would struggle in the program because of the, you know, lack of structure that's built into the program. He couldn't manage, and he was struggling at school too. When I would speak to leaders who didn't even know what his condition was, who hadn't really made much of an effort to come into Ronan's world, I was pointing out that as this gets harder for him to participate, as he has to miss more and more of church because it is so hard for him, this is going to get worse and this has huge implications. I was told that even if Ronan can come, you know, like maybe once a month, because Ronan doesn't need this. Ronan has already made it in the celestial kingdom. It's up to us to try and be as good and be there for Ronan, because we know where he's going. We can just achieve what he has. So we don't need to meet his earthly needs. It doesn't matter. Oh, they miss so many opportunities with him. They miss so many. And it had its impact on his life. It was really, really hard for him. Eventually, he had a breakdown where he couldn't attend school. He couldn't get out of bed. And pretty much we've been here since, for the past roughly 10 years. This is how his life has been. He still struggles to go outside. You know, a really effective church program could have helped with that. However, we are where we are. What I made clear to leaders at this time was that if this is where we are with Ronan, and at the moment he's young enough and there are other structures, school and things to support him, eventually this will affect me and I will not be able to attend, because I'm going to have to, his care needs are going to increase and my needs are going to, my having to support his needs are going to increase. And while you're forgetting Ronan, are you going to forget me too? And I would ask that question. I never, ever, ever got an answer. I remember saying to people directly, this means the world to me. If I were to go, would you just let me? Would you want to reach out knowing this meant everything? I never really got an answer to that either. Because, of course, we have to respect people's wishes. I guess I was asking, if I struggled to be at church, would someone care enough? Because I could see this life of isolation and loneliness and the role of a carer stretching out ahead of me. I knew ahead of time that what it was going to create in me is exactly where I am today. Developing mental health difficulties, depression, anxiety, loss of family relationships. I have a dad who wouldn't speak to me anymore because I couldn't be there enough to chat with him. I will just lie in my bed staring at the ceiling just to breathe and just to be, because I have no thoughts left and or energy left in my body. I am being tested for various types of cancer at the moment, and all is good. There's no worries there. My healthcare providers are very, very good, and if the signs show that treatment is needed, we have a fantastic NHS in this country and it's really, really good. But I also have developed type 2 diabetes and blood pressure problems and all of these things, all because I can't get out either. I can't contribute, and it is so, so lonely. Now this, I've made this really clear to church leaders too. This is a societal problem. I shouldn't have to be in this situation, because as a society, we agree, and the society that we live in, we agree that we're going to, as a community, look after our sick, infirm, and our vulnerable. And so supports and structures should be in place. And I've been a member of the church long enough to know that all of those videos we would see where there's these inspirational stories about people who have special needs, it always involves the other people who are supporting them. It doesn't ever involve people saying that you've already made it, you don't really need our help. As I became less and less physically able to be at church, and I missed it, I really missed it. We all know church would drive us crazy a lot of the times, and I missed being able to contribute. I missed being able to go to the temple, to have the experience, you know, of sacrament, where we are all passing sacrament down that road to each other, helping each other to make that covenant. We make that as a people in our community, and I would see so much beauty in that. And I couldn't do that anymore, and I certainly couldn't provide it to myself at home. People would ask me very often if anyone would, has anyone asked if you can get sacrament at home? And they would ask that question every time. I would say, no one's ever asked, if they could bring it. So many people ask that question, but no one ever converted it into action. When COVID happened, and we started this podcast right before that time, I didn't have a way to contribute. So, and I could see all of my friends leaving, all of the people that I loved and that were, I would be making these covenants with every week. And I figured if we could talk about the things that they were struggling with, well, then maybe we could make something that is just enough. The church that we thought that we had joined, the thing that we saw as Zion, maybe if that just requires honesty and vulnerability and realness, and it's okay if we disagree, and it's okay if you have a problem with church history, and maybe this thing is not helpful for you, and can you still be a member of the church and yet reject polygamy or not believe in that Joseph Smith was about? Is it even possible? There isn't room to explore that at church, but what I could do is explore it with friends and colleagues, and so I, This is what here was all about. It was to have fun and challenge and help me to think. And it was the only service left that I could offer to this faith that I love, because I wasn't wanted or needed. Everything was moving on without me. And then when COVID happened, I remember saying, oh my goodness, now we're all in this same place. It's awful, isn't it? I know that so many people are going to struggle with the isolation of COVID and the mental health challenges and all of the other stuff. I know this is my life. Let's talk about that. Here are some ways that we can help. We can go digital. And I asked the ward, maybe do we want to get together and maybe have a little prayer? The response I got to that was, we already pray as families. And so that's okay. We that wasn't needed. Eventually, when they got behind the Zoom thing, because it was becoming more prevalent, that worked for a while. Ronan's needs eventually became so extreme that I'm up all night with him, and the time of church in the morning, and it just hurt so much that everyone was going back to their normal lives and leaving us behind again. And I knew it was going to happen. And I thought, maybe there'll be times when they'll remember us, but they don't. And that's okay. It hurts. But right back whenever I was talking about the things that work for everyone and don't work for other people, I had already way back found where my community really is. And more my community, which is online and is, you know, in the community out with the church, it's you guys, right? The people who are always in the comments or sending emails or are on the blogger knuckle in general, the screen names that we've got so familiar with. Oh, I held on to that because you guys, we were all in that same place. Eventually, I got to meet Sarah. She joined us in the comments. Thanks to the likes of Sunstone, the rest of the Brit Avengers podcasters, and we would talk all the time. It was a real answer to the isolation and loneliness and feeling of uselessness and not being part of a church community. We found other ways to make it work, and it's been a lifesaver in many ways for me. When Sarah then had this passion for safeguarding and had all of these skills and expertise, and it was so important to her that something could be done to be able to then have this incredible woman teach me and help lead this work in safeguarding, I felt like we could offer something to this amazing potential. The church could be so much better and healthier and safer for all of, not just children, everyone, if we could apply these principles that Sarah was bringing to my attention. And so we started the safeguarding work. Now, we had already, as someone who's sassy enough to start a podcast and think it's, you know, some people might have a problem with it, but this is all I have. This is my contribution. Taking those same lessons, we applied that to safeguarding. Look, some people are going to have a problem with it. And most people are like, you know, unless the prophet says, then we'll do it. But until then, it's not our job. Well, that's never been my approach. It's not Sarah's approach. It's not the rest of the Brit Avengers approach. And it's not your guys' approach too, right? We're allowed to think, we're allowed to act. And all of this experience. So we started safeguarding. And yeah, it was an uphill battle. We couldn't have achieved it without really, really good leaders in the church in the UK who saw it and who knew how important it was. And we mentioned this before, they're losing heart. They think it sucks. There are people who don't necessarily really want to do it or to understand why they're doing it. We have all of this, you know, knowledge. And if you would just take some advice from professionals, all of this stuff wouldn't happen or it would be mitigated. But what you have to do is train more people. You have to train the membership. You have to be having conversations about it. People will get behind it. Anyway, we have a lot of work still to do there, a lot of work. And we don't want the church to lose heart, because if it fails here, it's not going to happen in other places. And people really need to understand that it's important that people get behind this work. And it is going very, very well. And I don't think the leaders really see how well it's going. So I feel like for the past couple of years, I'm in as good a place as I can be. Conference will, well, it always hurts, right? There's always a few good things in there, enough things that we can hold on to. But there is pain. I also, around about this time, get the gift of being able to welcome into our family our fourth kid, who's a teenager who has come into our care and gets to be our forever child. Their pronouns are they and them, and they have taught me so much about what it means to be transgender, what the transgender experience is. They're a kid who is smart, is so smart. And all of my kids have taught me so much about integrity. It taught me how to think in different ways. This kid coming into a family with a background in Mormonism, we sat down, and for those who don't know, my husband's a non-member. The rest of my kids don't attend. And when I'm not physically there, we're still living it. This is still our experience. When they came into our family, I sat down with them with the For the Strength of Youth book. And we went through that together, telling them all of the things that we don't do or accept in our family. I don't believe that dating standards should look like this. We're a sex positive family. I don't believe that we should think about our bodies in these ways. And so here are the standards, and you're going to be exposed to those standards, and you're going to hear a lot about them. But I claim the freedom to talk about what I don't think is healthy, and you are entitled to have the freedom to think about what you don't think is healthy. So if there is something that's being presented to you, if we get to church on a Sunday and it doesn't meet with your standards of integrity or right and wrong, then you're allowed to reject that. I learned that as I spoke that. Landon wanted to be baptized, and over this past while has met with many missionaries as they've come into the area. They'll meet with Landon once. There will be a fantastic experience, and then we won't hear from them again. And I used to wonder why that is until the pattern became so great. I managed to get a hold of my bishop and ask him what's going on there. Is there a problem with teaching Landon? Is there some kind of. Now, I don't think I got what I would call an answer. I got a response where he said, "We can't tell the missionaries not to teach someone. That's not what we do." But there's something very, very weird there. And it affects my kid, who's experienced enough rejection in their life. In the meantime, my own experience. I've reached out to my bishop and my state president many times to talk about the effects of isolation. I asked to speak to my bishop and Relief Society president a while back, and it was in 2022. And I'd asked a question on Facebook. What happens when? What would your advice be if you are part of a faith community, but you can't participate? You're there in all but name. You've not got anything to offer. No one sees you, but there are closer churches or faith groups or none at all, where I can fully participate if I choose, and I can have something to offer and find community. Would you just leave, or would you do that, or what would you say? There was one person who did suggest, yeah, I would seriously think about just leaving, who is a member of the church. And that was a bit of a breath of fresh air. It broke my heart a little bit because it's not how it's supposed to be, but it's the right answer, isn't it? I pushed that to the back of my mind. And when I spoke to my bishop, asked for my Relief Society president to be there. It was one of the most traumatic experiences I've ever had in my life, and I've had a few traumatic experiences. While my bishop seemed impassive, my Relief Society president seemed so angry, because, well, she had reached out to me a few times by sending me notes. You know those little printable laminated things that you have, those little handouts? She'd sent me a couple of those once or twice, and a birthday card. And the thing is, I'm not, I hope this is clear from what I've been saying. This isn't a problem with an individual who's not doing something. There's a systemic problem here where a child who has been unsupported and their disabilities has affected the whole family. And this is what happens in society. This isn't just a church issue. She was so angry. And I haven't felt that distressed about anything since, oh my goodness, a really traumatic airport experience with Ronan where the police were called. I asked for help. I asked for understanding. And what I got was they made it about them. I wasn't entitled to feel alone. I wasn't entitled to feel lost or vulnerable or like I missed my community because she'd sent some cards. And I don't understand how that happened when I wasn't making any accusation about... I wasn't getting home teachers, ministering visits, the visiting teachers. I wasn't getting responses to my email. But if I show up in church, and this is the thing, if I am there, if I'm physically there, then they will engage with me. But from a distance, there isn't anything. And it adds to the feeling of being trapped and four walls where I really want a life. I want to be able to go and worship how I want to worship, where the resentment then that builds towards my family who have, you know, all of these care needs. I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to feel like they're the barrier, because they are not the barrier, right? They are not. Okay. I think that brings you all up to speed almost, because we're going to get to this weekend. Except just to mention that any requests that I've made, and, you know, there's been a few, to speak in council with my church leaders have been ignored. They haven't responded to my emails. They are really, really good guys. They are really good guys. So, you know, like, no one be mean to them, but their hearts are good. I don't know if they've been told not to speak to me, or they're just, I mean, I suspect they're just worried something that they say is going to end up on a podcast, which hurts. What has kept me in this space has been integrity. It keeps us talking, because we know what the right thing is. We are responding in our integrity to what needs are, and we are being completely honest as we learn better about what that is. We are honest with ourselves. This space and its integrity is exceptional. I have had so few, now I'm not saying I've not had any, I have had so few messages, contacts from church members over this course of this journey, what compared to the amount of non-members who have messaged, emailed, been really creative in how they've reached out to me to support me, and the people who have kept me strong in my activity as a Latter-day Saint have generally been the post-Mormon community, because you know how much it means. So my emails are going unresponded to. My questions about what's happening with not wanting to teach my transgender kid, what is this? There wouldn't be any barriers to teaching with sort of changes to gender, they're non-binary. There shouldn't be any barriers there, but I mean, clearly there's something. I was told they were going to look into it, and yeah, they don't want to talk to me. We've copied our bishops and state presidents into Well, we were copying them in at one point to every safeguarding sort of communication we had with the church until we realised there's no point because they don't care. They've declined every opportunity to sit in meetings we've had with lawyers or sort of presentations that we've been doing. They clearly want to stay far away from it, which sucks. But I guess if you feel like you're in a difficult position as a bishop and the church will tell you what you need to know, then, you know, that's okay. It sucks, but there we are. But meanwhile, in all of this stuff is me, who's alone, spiritually, very, very isolated, but for this community. Now, this is the experience of transgender people. This is the experience of other carers. This is the experience of so many of you, my friend Jacob in the comment. You people who are here, you've experienced this. You know this. This is not one person. So, conference. I've made the choice to be here and engage with this community. I've made the choice because I truly believe things can be better and that I have service that I can offer. And it might be hard and it might be tough and I've got a lot to learn and I'm by no means perfect, but I can serve God in this way. I can serve the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in this way. And that's something that I keep in mind. While the first session of conference happened, I want you all to really understand this, especially if you're a church member who's listening to this. I want you to really, really know the context that I know that so many talks and harmful policies and procedures and things have happened that are unconscionable, that are so, so bad. But when I talk about a particular talk, it might be really surprising that, well, why is this the big deal? We've heard LGBTQ peoples spoken about in dehumanizing ways. We've had the policy of exclusion. We've had all sorts of things going on. And hold on, this little white girl is your problem? I'm very aware of that. The talks have not yet been put on the Gospel Library app in their text form. And I don't especially want to think about this too much. So when it comes out, I'll let you all have a look at it yourself if you're so inclined. They are there on YouTube and in the Gospel Library app if you want to have a listen. But the talk that was given by Elder Jack N. Gerard was so pivotal for me. Now, the one little, and I hate taking individual lines because it doesn't give context to the whole talk. I do this for a very clear reason, because this is ultimately how I feel the talk was summed up. When he said, Christian kindness is not a substitute for integrity. After totally redefining the word integrity, offended me on a level, and yes, I say offended, offended me on a level that I don't even know yet if I have been able to process enough to be able to describe what that did. The one thing that we have in this space is integrity, and I can testify of the integrity of the people in this space, because I've felt it, I've seen it demonstrated. It keeps nuanced members here. It keeps people working for a greater good. It helps keep our core values. My son serves in the military, and I described this to him that when he asked what has happened, that someone just gave a talk where he redefined the word integrity, and because integrity is it's something that is fundamentally it can in the military, if you break the value of integrity, it is incredibly serious. And he pointed out immediately, if you redefine integrity, that's not integrity. You don't have integrity. Integrity is why I felt like I could stay in this space and fight for safety, fight for inclusion and belonging, and that I could try my best to model it, that I could try and model what healthy anger looks like, what heartbreak looks like, what aloneness looks like, and that it sucks, and that people are trying so hard to stay in the church, and we can get creative about how we do that, and it's okay to be, you know, informed and to reject stuff where we need to reject it, and that being key. If there is something that you are being taught in church and it goes against your values, if you feel that to accept that would go against your own personal integrity, then you reject that value. You reject that thing that you're being taught. To do that, to redefine integrity, and then to tell me that your version of integrity is more important than the Christian kindness that Jesus, you know, in the Bible, when he talks quite a lot about loving one another, not as prioritized over anything else. That was it. That was everything. To twist integrity and to make that more important than the thing that Jesus is actually keeping us all in this space to sort of promote, I saw as a culmination of everything that I've tried to stand for being rejected. I know that awful things have been said over that pulpit, awful things. And we stay to make it work. This told me that this felt anti-Christian. Now, I want to just explain where the whole Christianity thing too. I am really grateful to be in a space where I don't need to, how to phrase this? I need space for to be unhappy with Jesus, to be in a space in a day where I don't even know if God exists. I don't know if I care that he exists. I am allowed to change how I feel and grow with what's important. And some days, the path of Christianity, as it's defined generally by the sort of major Christian churches, is one that I can buy into because it promotes all of the values, or many of the values, that I hold sacred. I see so much value in the stillness and the teachings of Buddhism, of many people from the Muslim faith have. I mean, there's so much to learn out there that being unrestricted is something that has become important to me. So when I say this seemed anti-Christian, what I mean is I felt dirty. It felt wicked in ways that I cannot explain. A man of God who's telling me to focus on his version of integrity more than what Jesus taught. I listened then to the rest of conference, hoping that there would be something that would change, not change my mind, because this is a value. When my core values are, you know, in question, it's important that we listen to the messages that's sending. I wanted to know, is there a way that I will be able to hold something that will make this work? I wrote the email between sessions and, okay, this is where it gets, this is where the ride gets bumpy, people. Believe it or not, it's kind of been a little bit of a roller coaster, but this is the bumpy part. Okay, I wrote the email, which in effect, I read it out on Nemo the Mormon's Halftime Show, if you want to go check it out. But I left a part I didn't read. The email, you know what, maybe I should just read it to you all, because I want to give you all the whole context. I said, "Dear Bishop and President," so this went to my state president and my bishop, This conference, specifically the talk given by Elder Jack Gerard, has been a defining moment for me. What he said in so many ways was antithetical to the path that I chose when I decided to become a Christian and join the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm heartbroken to be writing these words, but the pain I'm experiencing gives me no other choice than to formally ask if you would remove my name from the records of the church with immediate effect. And the part I didn't read out in Nemo's show, I wanted to sort of leave that in privately. If you have any counsel you'd like to offer, then I would absolutely be open to that and would be willing to postpone my decision. Just to clarify, my decision when I hit the send button has been made. This is an opportunity for them to speak to me. I go on to say, however, my isolation and the fact that I haven't had any contact from my leaders in any form leads me to expect that might not be something you'd be able to offer me. If this is the case, then please go ahead and remove my records as soon as you're able. It is my hope that members or leaders might be willing to stay in touch. I do love this community and this church. I believe that taking this step will align with my personal integrity and my commitment to follow the Saviour's path. So, I was being messaged by the BritVengers to ask if there's been any response, and I'll get to that part in a moment. This was on Saturday. I listened to the rest of conference in the hope that maybe there would be something that would help me hold on. Now, I also knew that in Nemo's conference predictions, I had suggested there might be a Scotland Temple. We've got a lot of reason to have thought that that might happen. And I remember thinking, if they announce it today, will I regret this? Because they might well announce it today. And if they don't announce it today, they'll announce it at some point. It's a thing that is going to happen. I gave all of the talks my best shot. I tried to be so positive about them. Elder Kieran, everyone's talking about Elder Kieran's talk, right? This is in the summary, he says, God is in relentless pursuit of you. The purpose of this earth is to give an opportunity to learn, grow, make mistakes, repent, and return home. Jesus Christ's atoning sacrifice removes every roadblock that would separate people from their eternal home. But it seems like the church doesn't want to remove those roadblocks for me and other people like me. Nemo's roadblocks are still there. Sarah has to leave part of her behind at the chapel doors. They all left. And I don't know how we can say that through the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints that I feel that God is in relentless pursuit of me. Because the only way I've been able to feel God's love is here with you all. So, Elder Kieran's talk broke my heart, because while it is absolutely something that people have been celebrating for all the right reasons, the lived experience of so many of us is that no, that isn't reality. That may be God's, but that is not the church. So right before the end of Nemo's show, I hit the send button and I made the commitment to follow my integrity. The messages that I have received in support from this community have been so needed. And I am so conscious that while many of you who are here and who are listening, and many of you who just, you know, through the history of the church have had their narratives changed and twisted about why you made this decision or why you were excluded or why you're not here. So many of you had to do this alone, and I have not had to. And I think that's why as much as I feel it in my heart, I should feel it in my heart. That's why I am very, very okay. I'm very okay. Thrive is happening this weekend and all of my gang are coming up to Scotland at the perfect time, just when I could really be doing with some friendly faces and some community. And I don't even have to wait for that, because so much is the love that I have received and the support that I have received is exceptional. Before I tell you what response I've had from my church leaders, and it's important that I do tell you, because it's the major part of the story here, it's actually, I think, what's going to underline what I'm saying. You know what, let's jump to that right now, actually. We've held on too long. I hadn't had any response for the whole of conference weekend. On Monday, now keep in mind I've had response from all over the internet. I did get a message from someone in a Mormon group, a nuanced Mormon group, within hours of Nemo's show, because someone had been in touch to say that Jane has made this announcement. She no longer wants to be a member of the church. And while I was messaged by one of the moderators with love and support, I was reminded that the rules of the group are that I have to be confidential and not share anything that I see in the group or read in the group on a podcast, which I've never done, which I've committed never to do. And that shocked the hell out of me, I'll be honest. Now, just to stress, these are wonderful, darling people that I feel they're very important to me. I resign my membership, and within hours I get a member who's messaging me because something's changed, and that might affect my integrity. And it was wounding to have to be reminded for the only reason that I've said I've resigned my membership. So before even my bishop could have a look at that, before it has been action, while I still am a member, to be reminded by anyone about how I conduct myself and what my moral behaviour should be, I'll be honest, that was devastating. Okay, so on Monday, my bishop had still not responded. Apparently, he is away. So, my state president, and I copied in the secretary, my state president messaged, and he, while didn't directly decline to meet with me, the effect of the email is the same, that he's you know, sad about it, he's concerned, he, you know, he's a very, very kind guy, but surely my bishop will, you know, my bishop will surely be in touch to see if I still want to meet and have a discussion about it. So he doesn't want to take this opportunity to speak with me. I have still not, up to this point, had a response from my bishop, who has been quite comfortable to post on Facebook about temple news. But this isn't important enough. One of our church leaders talked about relentless pursuit. And that's not what this is, right? I'm going to leave, but does anybody want to talk to me before I leave? And the answer is clearly no. If church members believe what we claim to believe, and I'm still finding it very difficult to change this wee language, if church members really believe it, this is my eternal salvation, this is that important, and the reason why you are in this calling is that is the most important thing, the eternal salvation of the members of the church, our spiritual well-being. I'm very clear that this is how all of the Britvengers have sort of been experiencing life recently. We're all very isolated in this regard. But I immediately messaged my state president back and told him that I decline any further discussions and please remove my records immediately. I will not be availing myself of any opportunity to be able to counsel with anyone. My decision has been made. I feel like it's almost been made for me in many ways, but that's where we're up to. So technically at this time, what is it, 10 to 5 on Wednesday after conference, I'm technically still a member because my records have not yet been removed. They will be. I have no doubt that will be actioned. And it's almost incidental because actually it wasn't about my membership for me. My membership has always been important, but it's what my membership meant, what it allowed me to do, how it bound me to a community. I asked Sarah, I was having a conversation with my girl, and I was talking about that. I do have these concerns still because my temple covenants are still important to me, and I intend to still keep everyone that I made in the temple. Well, because I promise, because what should this change? I have every, you know, respect and support for people who do feel differently about that. But for me, this is something that's important to me right now. And Sarah reminded me that leaving the church doesn't mean that I leave behind my covenants. In fact, exactly the opposite. This is how I keep my covenants. I want to say thank you so much. I don't think I could possibly still be in this space without, obviously the Britvengers gang and our honorary Britvengers, our Doug and Colby, and all of you who have been messaging and supporting over the years that we have been doing this work. The gang at Community of Christ, since we first met them at Sunstone, have been a spiritual haven. And I think that's what's kept me fed in ways that I need to be fed. I mean, we figure out our own ways, don't we? Sarah's currently in the middle of Scotland in the wilderness having an absolute ball. And if that is not being spiritually fed, you know, what is the point? We find our own ways, but the people in Community of Christ have been absolutely incredible. And I had already made a decision that affiliating more formally with them is something that I planned to do in the future. I don't know where my heart is taking me right now. This is certainly processing time. But what does this mean for 21st Century Saints? What does this mean for the podcast? And what does this mean for the safeguarding work that we've been doing? Well, I hope it's made very clear to you all that I am still the me who started a podcast, that nothing has changed within my heart, that nothing has changed about my values, that I still see the need for important discussion that maybe will now become a bit more broad. There is so much pain that is still out there, and I think there's things that we can talk about. So we're going to keep podcasting. Now, the health issues that I mentioned earlier on have held me back a lot. So it may be a little bit more sporadic over the next couple of months, but we will be back into a better routine just shortly, I promise. And Sarah and I were looking at ways that we can make that happen. But things are very, very much settling down here for me, and my treatment is it's all in hand. Safeguarding. To the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we have not finished this work. I committed, along with Sarah Delaney, that we were going to support this community to be the best community it could possibly be, the safest community it could possibly be. And we have expertise, experience, and integrity, courage, passion, and a love of this community to offer. We will always keep are promises of confidentiality and integrity. Unless you send me an email where you're being an absolute idiot and I feel a need to quote it on air, like, you know, if you're a state president who doesn't want to meet with me to, you know, help me stay in the church or something equally important, I'm maybe going to mention it. I will. I feel entitled to do that. It's about me. However, as it relates to the work that we do, as it relates to any conversations that we have, those have and will always remain private. We do have really positive, challenging working relationships with church lawyers, who I have no doubt will similarly want reassurances that I keep everything confidential. Yeah, we will. We will keep everything confidential. As it relates to the safety of members of this church, people that we have spoken with, if any of them want to speak publicly, and some are considering that, we will absolutely stand by you, support you, and anything that we can do to provide any evidence or testimony that we have, we reaffirm our ability to do that. If you need to be put in touch with legal representation, we have been doing that and we commit to continue to do that. Legal representation here, not members of the church, by the way. This is independent legal representation that we're referring to. We will always commit to referring people to supportive, appropriate services which may support you in your journey. The aims of those things that we signpost to are not always the same aims as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has, which is why we try, where possible, to act in accordance to the victim's needs. As it applies to working with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and lawyers who act in that capacity, or any leadership who are talking with us about safeguarding, as you figure this out, we will absolutely always keep those conversations confidential. Always. When we bring a concern to you about a member or someone who may have been a member or used to be a member, you know that we have never made those things public. We have been in touch many times and we will continue to be in touch when we have a concern that you are able to act upon to keep members of the church safe. We will continue, in short, to act in ways that we have always acted. We, I believe, have supported everything that you endeavour to do to keep the church safe. We have demonstrated integrity. Because this has changed, integrity remains the same. I would point out to Elder Jack Gerard that integrity isn't something that we can analyse to death that gets to change with the definitions that we want to apply to it. You either have integrity or you do not have integrity. There is no, as someone who's very, very nuanced and not having a binary is important. In this case, you either have integrity or you do not have integrity. We have always committed to act in integrity. And we will continue to do so. You all who have been with us in this journey have shown more integrity than I've seen from the people that I thought I could rely on as church leaders. And I thank you for being guides, mentors, supporters, and hopefully you will continue with us on this journey. Nemo the Mormon is his halftime show on the, what was it, the Saturday night session is where I first broke this news. So if you want to, you know, hear more about what happened there, it was just a very brief announcement. But do go check out his channel, because supporting him, he gave up so much of his career and what's happening in his life to be able to do this full time. And he puts the work in. So if you can support his work in any way, we would be really grateful. Now, I know it's short notice for those of you who haven't brought a ticket, but if you want to come to Thrive here in Glasgow this weekend, then I would be absolutely honoured. We would love to be able to support you. We are going to do some incredible things over this weekend. Post-conference, We all need it. So if you are able to make any last minute plans, or if you're thinking if it's possible, pop over, because we will make you extremely welcome. And with that, thank you so much for being with us on this journey. I truly appreciate you, and we will see you super soon. I bless all of your journeys.